time to thrive. Welcome to the Thriveology Podcast with Dr. Lee Bockham. Join us as we explore ways that you can thrive in your life, regardless of what life throws at you. It's your life. Time to live it.
Hey, Thrivers, this is Lee Bockham. Thank you for being here. We're here because we're working to learn to thrive better. I always say that I'm a full-time thriveologist, but a part-time thriver. What I mean by that is I'm constantly trying to learn how to thrive. That's my career, is to learn better ways of thriving, and sometimes I manage to apply it to my life, but a lot of times I don't. And this week, the last few weeks, I've really been thinking about mindsets, about paradigms. And when I was in graduate school, one of my emphases was paradigm theory. How paradigms develop. And if you're not familiar with that, that goes back to the idea that we all have this mental mindset, this way of understanding the world. Now, what has made me think about it is because I've been thinking about how you change mindsets. In fact, that was what we talked about last week, 7 different ways that you can modify your mindset. And I continue to think about that, just kind of process through that. And last night, I had the opportunity of seeing a remake of a series that I greatly enjoyed as a child. The series was Cosmos. And if you didn't see it, it's a journey into science. It's a journey into different ways of understanding the world around us and the universe. And last night, it was Our Place in the Universe. And as the process went, they talked about how small we really are, how small we are on Earth, how we're not the center of the universe as was once believed. In fact, we believed that the sun went around us for a long time. And as it began to creep out, it began to make an understanding for me of how small we are in the vastness of the universe. And yet, how much we are so focused on our presence, on our being, on who we are. It's kind of an interesting place to have this paradigm that we all wear of us being in the middle of our world, in the middle of our little universe. And yet, when you back up on a science scale, we realize just how small our planet is, just how small we are on the planet, and just how small our universe is. And smaller we get as you expand outward into the far reaches of space. It was interesting to me because it reminded me about some of the basis of paradigm theory. When Thomas Kuhn talked about paradigm theory, one of the places that he drew from was the Copernican Revolution. And in the Copernican Revolution, it was the switch from understanding that we were the center of the world with the stars going around us to understanding that the sun was what we went around. And more than that, over time, we begin to understand that we are even smaller than that. Now, if you're not familiar with that change, you may not know how that happened, but for many years, up until 1599, the belief was out there that really the Earth was the center of the universe and that the sun went around us and that the other lights in the skies went around us. But then Giordano Bruno, he was a philosopher and a scientist, and he believed that the whole universe was infinite, that we were not the center of the universe. And he had that in a dream. It came to him in a dream. And he began to preach that. Well, unfortunately, that went against the paradigm of the church, the belief of the church, which was based on a worldview that had been pulled from the Bible, an understanding from the Bible about how the world was built. And so Bruno believed, though, that was incorrect. And he kept pushing and pushing and soon found himself in jail. Unfortunately, he was not able to prove his point about how this paradigm was wrong. He didn't have the tools. He was burned at the stake for his belief because he challenged the paradigm. 10 years later, just 10 short years later, Galileo looked in the sky through a telescope and realized that Bruno had been correct. The sun was going around us. The planets were out there going around us. And all those other little dots in the sky were also stars just like our sun. All it took at that point was not just somebody saying that things weren't right, but the capacity of looking out and seeing it by observation. That's paradigm theory. Paradigm theory always talks about a stair-step development, that we stay with the worldview, we stay with the understanding of how the world works until that worldview no longer works. And there are revelations that come along that completely upend different belief systems. For instance, in the world, my world that I come from in psychology, we've had multiple over the years, multiple ways of re-understanding what's going on. And so, you know, if you look out for a long time, there was a belief that we were not responsible for our own actions. People who had mental illness many, many centuries ago were believed that they were possessed by demons. And in some place, that's still the belief. But then along came some other understandings, and people might say, well, the devil made me do it, about when they did things wrong. But there was still that paradigm, holding on to the paradigm that we were not in control of our behavior. And then suddenly there is a belief that there's something going on in our psyche that was causing those things. And we began to have a revolution. The Freudian revolution was to understand that what was causing all of the problems then, which was what they would have considered to be hysteric behavior. Hysteric behavior meaning there were people who were not able to speak for any reason other than the psychic issues, the psychological problems, and the repression of the emotions was so strong. And so along came Freud, who said, wait, what's going on is all of these emotions are being stuffed, and all the pressure builds up. And remember, Freud was at the time when there were the steam engines. And so his model of understanding reality was the steam engine. And so as the pressure builds, and you might have heard that, you know, the idea of pressure building up, and you got to relieve the stress, relieve the pressure. All of those are from a worldview that Freud enjoyed, where he understood that these problems were because we didn't allow those emotions out, that the Victorian era was so repressed that it didn't allow emotions out. And that began to be the standard way of understanding people, that people had sublimated feelings and that there was a pulling between the life force and the death force and all the other pieces that were Freudian concepts. And then others came along, and because Freud's model didn't work for everything, they began to say, well, maybe it's a little like this, but they still based it off Freud. And so then you have the idea that it's not about the ego and the id and the superego. Maybe it's about meaning and a deeper place of power. And there were lots of other different points where people would say, well, maybe this solves where this doesn't work. That's the nature of paradigm theory. Paradigm theory gives us a working platform to work through things, and then it doesn't work anymore. And when it doesn't work, we suddenly have to find a new way of understanding. So Freud's worked for a long time, and then in comes the biological theories of our psychology, that depression is caused by chemical imbalances. And once again, we're working on a very biological model. But that's a shift. Suddenly, the doctors were being trained to give medicine rather than to give therapy. Why? Because our understanding had changed. Well, at least part of the understanding had changed. We still understood that there's some piece of the psychology that could not be touched by the medicine. So then that was the current theory. And then we began to understand that there's this part of us that is beyond just those emotional places and those difficulties and the psychological traumas. There's something greater than that. So transpersonal psychology came along and said, wait, what about our core self, kind of our soul, our inner spirit? What does that fit into this? And our search for meaning began to grow. And then we begin to see the new places where some people came along and said, wait, we have been looking at what's wrong with people. What about what's right? And positive psychology becomes a paradigm. All of them are paradigms that are not going to explain things fully because they can't. They don't understand things completely, and so we're always going to fall short. So what does this have to do with thriving? Well, okay, I've got to admit that I was watching a movie, and I'll say I was half watching. I was kind of watching it along with my daughter and my wife. This is over Christmas break, and one of the lines in there caught me. Because this family was stuck in this business that the family had passed down, and it became a sacred business to the family. But it wasn't working out. It was falling apart, and it was tearing the family apart. And so finally, the matriarch of the family turned to one of the co-stars of the movie and said, this is what happens. First, there's an innovation, and the innovation then becomes tradition. Then the tradition becomes the sacred cow. That's not exactly how she phrased it, but that's my understanding. And I went, wow, that's profound. Innovation, tradition, sacred cow. Think about how that works in your life in the life of your family, in the life of a business. There's some innovation that happens. You take on something, you change something in your life, and that's an innovation. But then that innovation begins to be something that you repeat enough that begins to be tradition, and then you can't not do it. In my life, I watched my change. My innovation was to reform the way I eat. I had been at a place of eating bad stuff for me and had gotten into poor health and got sick. And so after I got sick, I realized that my paradigm of understanding how to take care of myself was no longer working. I had to do something new. And so I began to work on how to make that new. The innovation in my life, the changing of eating and the exercising and watching after my body. I had long been watching after my mind and watching after my psyche, but not my body. And it paid the price. And so suddenly I had to innovate, I had to come up with something new. Well, as I innovated, as I added new things in, they began to be tradition. So my changes in eating now have become tradition. And here's the thing. I realized that when I have to do it differently, it's very difficult. It has become a sacred cow, something that I want to hang on to, partly because of the familiar. Now, the thing that I try to remind myself is there's always something beyond that. There's always a new paradigm, always a new idea, and I've got to be open to that. But that's how it happens for me. I remember at one point we were looking for how we were going to make sure that our kids did what they wanted to at the holidays. And we had picked up a new tradition. We'd gone one time to an event. We did something one time, and the next year we did it again, and guess what that was? It went from innovation, adding something new, to tradition. And then the next year, when we didn't know if we were going to do that, everybody got upset because then it had become the sacred cow, that what we had to preserve at all costs, what we had to protect, what we had to make sure happened, all because we get stuck in that. There's a story in family therapy when we talk about the systems, how things get ingrained in the systems. And the story is about the little girl who's watching her mother bake the ham, and her mom cuts it in half and cooks the two different pieces. And so the little girl says, "Mom, why do you do that? Why do you cut the ham in half?" And the mother said, "You know what? I don't know. I can ask. I'll ask my mom." And so she goes and she says, "Hey, Mom, why is it that we always cut the ham in half and we cook it in two different pots?" And the little girl's grandmother said, "You know, that's a good question. I learned it from my mother. Let's ask her." And so they went to the great-grandmother and they said, "Great-grandmama, why is it that we cut that ham in half and we cook it in two different pots?" And the great-grandmother laughed and she said, "Oh, that's because I never had a pot big enough to hold the whole ham. So I had to put it in two smaller ones." What becomes an innovation at some point? The great-grandmother solving her question of how do you cook a ham too big for the pot you have was to cut it in half. But as it passed down, and as she probably didn't even teach it, as it was just learned, it becomes tradition. And then it's hard to break. It becomes sacred cow. It happens in family lives. It happens in businesses. How many businesses do we watch that are formed around an innovation, that are created around something new that is transformative for the marketplace? But then after that, it becomes their tradition. It becomes the standard way of doing it. And pretty soon you can't do it differently. Think about how many have been upended by that. Print newspapers is a good example. What killed print newspapers? Online advertising. Online advertising was so much more effective and targeted that the old style of advertising no longer worked. The innovation of print holding the ads, which happened many years ago, was broken by the innovation of online ads. When the online newspapers couldn't keep up, they began to close because they were in that tradition and you can't do it differently. They couldn't see another way of doing it. The sacred cow had become so ingrained that they could not see a new way around it. It happens very quickly in businesses. Some of the most nimble businesses at the beginning end up having the trappings of the paradigm. They're stuck in a paradigm because they went from an innovation to a tradition. And when it went from tradition to sacred cow, they were caught off guard when the next thing happened. It happens for all of us for a couple of different reasons. One is that our mindsets become frozen. Our understanding of the world around us become frozen in place by that. We're trapped by our understanding. That's what we were talking about last week of how do you change that mindset? How do you look for something new? How do you perhaps try to make a switch? And we're going to talk a little bit more about how you change that and challenge it a bit more this time, because that'll give us some more ways of making sure that that tradition sacred cow phase doesn't keep us frozen in place, that we have a new place of being. There's a term in psychology I think it's very important for us to talk about, that the social psychology idea, the term is habituation. Habituation is the idea that whatever we do becomes habit and becomes the normal. In the beginning, it makes us uncomfortable, and that's the amazing thing about humans is we're able to adapt. But once we adapt, we tend to get stuck until the next thing makes us adapt. And usually we hold on to the old until it's almost too late. We don't quite get out in time. Think about the bubble bursts that have happened in financial spaces. Usually it's because people could not see all of the evidence mounting around them that it was about to go. The dot-com people didn't see that the dot-com age was about to burst because it had been artificially inflated. The housing market people didn't see that the housing market was about to burst because they missed the evidence out of habituation. They had gotten used to the easy loans. They got used to being able to pull in all the money they wanted to. They had gotten used to the every year getting a return on their real estate that was beyond what they could get in the marketplace. And once they got used to it, they believed it would continue forever. And as the evidence began to grow, they still missed it. Big institutions missed that change. Why? Because of habituation, because of getting stuck in seeing the world in that way. There's been about 4 years now. We moved into a new neighborhood. Now, our old neighborhood had begun to transition. When we moved in, it was everybody in the neighborhood owned their house. But as time went on, the transition was to rental property. And we began to see that if we didn't get out soon, we were going to be the last house that was owned on the street by the people living in it. And so we quickly decided that we needed to get out. And the impetus was our neighbor saying, hey, our child has left for college. We don't need this space. We're moving. And so they began to talk about getting their house ready to go. And we went, wow, we've got to get on this. And so we got ahead and quickly moved out of the neighborhood and got out really just in time as we look back. Now, the new neighborhood we're in put us at a different threshold. We stepped up in our house. We stepped up to a nicer home, a nicer neighborhood. And here was what was interesting to me about this whole idea of habituation. For the first while, I would walk in the neighborhood feeling like a fake, like I didn't belong there, like somebody was going to come up to me and say, hey, you don't belong here. This is too nice a neighborhood for your kind to be here. And so that was my starting point. I was uncomfortable. I'd be walking my dog waiting for people to call me out on it. Nobody ever did. It was my internal trapping. But over time, what I noticed is that I got used to it. I got used to those being my streets, that though this was my neighborhood, my house. I began to take that in. I habituated to it. I got used to it, and now it doesn't feel foreign. I just remember the feeling of it being so foreign in those early days. Now it feels normal. Now it feels like our place, but it didn't for the longest time. That's habituation. How about when you go to maybe a new gym? When you go to a new gym, it's going to feel uncomfortable. You're not sure where everything is. I told this story about this for my wife and I. When she started going to a gym, she came home a few weeks ago and she said, I feel very uncomfortable. I don't know where things are. I remember the same thing for me when I started going to the new Y. I felt the same different. You know, I didn't know where to go. I didn't know where to put my stuff. I didn't know where to exercise. I didn't know the flow and I didn't know the faces. Over time, I began to learn it. I began to understand how I was going to do my routine, and I got into a pattern. I habituated to that place. Changes in your diet, the same thing. At first, it feels different. You know, when I went from drinking sweet tea to drinking water, it felt odd for a while, and I had to get used to it. And suddenly, if I drink something different, the other day, I went to a place, and all they had was sweet tea, and I drank it, and it was difficult to even drink because it was out of my new pattern, what I'd gotten used to. And here's the thing, habituation cuts both ways. It allows us to adapt, but it also keeps us stuck. When something becomes the new normal, then it's hard to get rid of. When it goes from innovation to tradition, it quickly goes to sacred cow that it's hard to get rid of, that we stay there, we stay stuck. Our mindset keeps us frozen. Our mindset keeps us at that place. When paradigm theory tells us that there's a stair-step development, what it's telling us is that we stay on a flat until it no longer works. It's not a gradual rise. It's a radical change, because at some point our worldview will not work any longer, and we have to change to something else. We have to change to a new paradigm. But we can make it easier on ourselves. We can find ways of shortening that curve, of getting there quicker. And I just want to give you five different ways of softening that habit, of softening that innovation tradition, sacred cow pattern that happens, and how we can begin to make sure that our habituation isn't about being frozen. The first one is prepare to be awkward. Just recognize that it's okay to be awkward, that it's okay to feel a little off kilter, that you're trying new things. And once you no longer feel awkward, you know you've got to push a little harder. That's what keeps us growing, is just say, you know what, I'm just going to prepare for that. I'm going to recognize it's going to feel a little strange. When I'm trying something different, it's just going to feel a little bit new, and I'm going to push through that. I'm just going to take that on and say, I'm ready to be awkward. So the first thing is just preparing to be awkward. Prepare to be awkward and stretched. The second one is to invite contrarians into your life. Invite people who will give you a difference of opinion. If your political views are one way, find someone that will give you the opposite view. If your leanings and understanding of the world are one way, have someone with leanings the other way. If your understanding of business is one way, find someone new who's from outside the business. Sometimes we have the greatest insights. In fact, paradigm theory says that all great changes in any realm come from outsiders, not insiders. Insiders have gotten used to the mindset. They've habituated. They've gotten to the sacred cow point. Look for people from the outside who can give you a difference of opinion. Number three is accept criticism as potential coaching. Sometimes when people are critiquing us, criticizing us, giving us feedback, what they're telling us is the limits of our worldview, the limits of our mindset, the ways we have gotten ourselves stuck. So when we accept a criticism as potential coaching, instead of rejecting it, instead of saying, that's not me, and I don't want to hear that. That's what we often do with criticism, is we dismiss it. We act as if it's not true, and we push it aside. What if you accept criticism as the possibility, not that it is, but the possibility that it's coaching for you? That was one of the strategies one of my coaches, my staff coaches, talked about, is that she decided, we had somebody who had made a complaint about her interaction, the interactions with this coach. And I know this coach, and this coach is a very gifted person. And so I gave the feedback onto the coach, and you know, I was expecting her to tell me why that wasn't the case. And instead she said, you know, I've really got to think about that. I've really got to consider how that might have been true. And she came back and she said, you know what? I was off that day, and here's where my energy was, and I've got to make sure that doesn't happen anymore. I said, wow, what a great way of approaching this. And she said, oh, I have a theory that criticism is always free coaching. I've just got to figure out how it's going to. It's not that it's definitely a diagnosis, or that it's not that it's always true, but it's free coaching because it's telling you how somebody else is perceiving you. And then you have to step back and say, what part of that is true? What part of that is accurate? What part of that do I need to hear? So number three is accept criticism as potential coaching, and potentially free coaching, better yet. Number four is to raise your personal standards. Standards are what you expect of yourself, what you expect to live out, and we all have room to raise them. And whenever we raise our standards, we change our paradigm a bit. Whenever we go above that, because we're changing what we expect of ourselves. Standards are always how you expect to enter into the world, how you expect to show up in the world, how you expect to interact with other people, how you expect yourself to behave in the world, who you expect yourself to be. Those are your standards. Maybe it's about honesty or hard work or changing the world or what your motivation is for being with your family or your work. Or I mean, there are lots of places that you can have a personal standard. Just kind of think about where are the places you know you need to raise them. And we all have places We don't have to be told where we need to raise our personal standards. We all know. We might not want to admit to it, at least not in public. But in quiet, we know that we can raise our personal standards. And when we do that, we change our mindset. Our mindset has to grow to accept us in a new way. We've gotten used to ourselves in the old way, new standard, new mindset. So number four is raise your personal standard. Number five is to assume you missed something. Just assume that there's something missing from your understanding of the world. Assume you missed something and that something may point to places where the whole idea is missing, that there's a whole change possible. When I was doing my studies about paradigm theory, I read a book and the person was being asked what the world looked like right before the Copernican Revolution. How did people see the world? And he said, just the same as they saw it after. It looked the same. The difference was understanding what was behind it. Before, you could look up at the sky, and if you did not understand science from where you are right now, you could see the stars move across the sky and the sun move across the sky and the moon move across the sky, and you could understand how it could be seen that they are going around the earth. It could be appear that way if you had no other way of understanding it. But they had missed something. The calculations began to fit less and less. That's what led to the revolution. When the calculations no longer worked, when the observations no longer worked, then it all changed. And the way we hasten that is by assuming we've missed something along the way, assuming that there's some other understanding that we need to have, assuming that there's some other way of stepping into the world. And when we do that, we change our mindset, we change our worldview, and we don't get trapped by the tradition or the sacred cow. Instead, we're looking for the innovation. Innovations are what propel us to growth. Tradition's a nice place to rest. Sacred cow keeps us stuck. So find your innovation, live through the tradition, knowing that the next step is back to innovation. Okay, hopefully that was helpful for you in understanding how your paradigm gets stuck. And we've got some ways of getting beyond that. I hope that was helpful for you. If you found it helpful, I would love it if you could just leave a comment in the iTunes area. If you get this by iTunes, if you would just leave a comment, a review, that would be great. It lets other people know about us. You can also leave a comment in the comments area below if you're on the blog. If you're on Thriveology.com, that would be great. One other place you can help. It's very simple. If you're on Twitter, all you have to do to get ready to send a tweet that tells people you found something good is simply type into your browser, Thriveology.com. That's Thriveology.com, Thriveology.com/love. Thriveology.com/love. And if you tweet, it'll put that tweet ready to go. You can hit send or you can change it, but it'll let people know that you found some use here. Hope you did. Let me know what else you'd like to hear about. You can just email me at podcast@thriveology.com. That's podcast@thriveology.com. This is Lee Balcom wishing you the best in your thriving world.
Listening to the Thriveology podcast. Thank you for listening. If you want more information, visit us at Thriveology.com or at ThriveologyMagazine.com. Remember that Thriveology is spelled Thriveology. It's your life. Time to live it.